If I continue to spend all this time doing some of the policy stuff but lose the people, then what did I really gain? That would be a hard pill to swallow. Structures, systems are in place, but when you look behind, you got nobody following you. What was it all for?
What was it all for? That's a powerful and painful question. So painful that we might avoid asking ourselves because we're afraid of what the answer might be. But of course, in order to live and lead outward, it's exactly the kind of question that we need to ask. This is Leading Outward, a podcast from the Arbinger Institute, where we explore what it really means to live and lead with an outward mindset, seeing people as people. I'm Victoria Trammell, a senior consultant here at Arbinger, and your guide throughout this final coaching episode with Daniel. I'll pop in to provide some additional context to the conversation between Daniel and Chip, and I'll also be chatting with Chip directly to hear some of his thoughts. 4 years, Daniel has carried the weight of his school, trying to fix problems by creating and enforcing policies and making sure that things are run his way. Throughout his conversation with Chip, Daniel appears to question whether all of his effort over the last 4 years might not actually be creating real, lasting change, which is reflected in the question Daniel asked at the top of the show: what was it all for? By the end of this episode, Daniel and Chip wrap up their sessions together, and you'll hear how some of the work that Daniel has started is already making a difference in his school. Hopefully, you'll be inspired to reflect on yourself, like I've been, by Daniel's candor to explore his way of being both at work and in the world.
So how you been?
I've been good. Yeah, you got me, had me thinking all the last couple of weeks.
Well, I'm interested to know what you've been thinking about.
When we left our last meeting, like right away, I started looking at the influence pyramid a little bit more in terms of like, just as I was reflecting, which is one of my assignments. So like, I spent a lot of time just like dealing with things that are going wrong and correcting things. Because even as you were challenging like just some of the words that I was using about like war and different things like that, I was like, man, you know, how I was contributing to the problem that I was complaining about. And oftentimes I'll jump right away to just trying to either correct or dealing with that instead of helping things go right.
Where are the areas in which you know the right thing, but you're not doing them?
When I'm dealing with situations where I feel like frustrated or things aren't going the way that I think it should be going, or at least the time frame that I set for it to go, I'll just do it myself because there's a certain way that I want it done. In some ways, I may have not been having the patience teaching or talking about getting other people to do it. I, in some ways, wasn't doing it myself. I knew of it. I teach it. But when it came down to me actually applying it, I wasn't taking my own advice.
What do you think the implications of that are? To be teaching people things that you are putting up as valuable and presenting as being almost like an expectation in terms of their way of working, and then not working in that way. What do you think the consequences of that might be?
Yeah, people may not see it as like, I'm not real in terms of what I'm saying. If I'm not living out the same thing that I'm asking them to do, I can almost be seen as a hypocrite.
Do you think people in your life have that opinion of you ever?
I'm sure. That could be playing into some areas where the results aren't where I'm expecting them to be. I could be contributing to that just by the fact that I haven't done the very thing that I've been asking them to do. I might be slowing down the progress that I'm looking for and the speed in which I'm looking for it to happen. I might be slowing it down myself just by the fact that I haven't been truly genuine in what I'm saying I believe.
If I were a person being led by you, the message I could get is, well, this concept works well in the classroom. And when Daniel is explaining it to us, in abstract, it makes total sense. However, when the pressure's on, what I see Daniel doing is forcing his way of seeing on things. So the message could be, well, yeah, it's good as a philosophy, but it's not practical.
I was trying to be efficient or quick in fixing it just by dealing with it, but it wasn't yielding the results that at least made me feel satisfied. The problems I'm complaining about, they're not outside of me. I contribute to those problems by how I'm responding to it. My wife, we were in a car and she was complaining about something. And I'm like, you know, I just kept saying to myself, don't deal with what's going wrong. Like, figure out how I can help things go right. How I can help things go right. So just some of it's just a matter of just shutting up, you know. And I was getting some positive results with that, especially with her. Because it was like, usually I'll try to fix it and that usually doesn't work.
There's two ways I can shut up. I can shut up because it's the best thing to do for me in that moment. Because it gets me to a position where I don't have to hear as much pushback. Or I could be quiet because I'm really curious and interested in what this person has to say. And I really want them to be able to struggle and contend with in this conversation in a meaningful way. Do you see the difference?
Yeah. that's what's going to come across, right? How I'm regarding them or how I'm being in that moment, right?
Well, you tell me. Just think about your own experience, right? Yeah. Have you ever had somebody give you an insincere compliment?
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Yeah. You feel it. You know it, right? With all of my direct reports, I have one-on-ones with them every week. As I was thinking about that over the last couple of weeks, in some ways, it was just more of checking the box. Like, we have to meet. There's an agenda we got to get through. And I usually start off all those meetings. You know, we go through the niceties, how's it going or whatever. But that's just more of a politeness to get to the meat of what we're actually there for, you know. And I'm like, I got to slow down, really, is what I have to do. One of my APs, she hasn't been feeling good all week. And she'd been letting me know she wasn't feeling good. And, you know, I asked her how she was doing. We were starting that meeting. She's like, yeah, you know, I can't shake this bug. I'm dealing with some stuff. And I went, you know, all right. And right away to my agenda and just totally just brush right past that. And as I'm getting ready for this, I'm like, man, she probably was like, that jerk. I use that almost that exact example when I'm like training other coaches on like what not to do. You have your script of what you want to talk through and the questions you want to ask, and not to be so rigid about the fact that we have to get through this agenda that we don't see the person. They're sharing with you something that impacted their life. And then you went right away into like, okay, so tell me about that lesson. Been thinking about that. I find myself doing that very thing. I'm saying to myself, at least subconsciously, they know I care. But do they, you know, when it matters. Mm.
When you ask me, Chip, how are you doing today? What would be different about you if you really cared?
I'll listen, right? And slow down and just be present in that moment for that question that I was just asked and not just worrying about what I'm going to say next.
How naked do you feel without a script?
Oh, I feel like I have to always be prepared.
Tell me more about that.
Having that script is just, and I never really said this out loud, but not wanting people to ever get the impression that I wasn't prepared for the situation that was brought before me. But as I'm saying that now, I know, like when I'm training, I train the opposite, just about being fully present and actually listening. I think in my mind, I'm like going so fast that I haven't just taken the time to just be present in the moment.
So I'm just curious, what does it feel like to you when you think people are seeing you as being unprepared, unqualified, unequipped, not the man for the job? What does that feel like?
It could feel like the very thing where it don't belong. Just that, you're not the one for the job.
But I'm not asking about me or how it might feel for me or some abstract hypothetical person. Ask me how it feels for you.
I mean, I think in my mind, I never thought about it. I guess I try to always be prepared so that I never look like I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not afraid to tell people like, hey, I don't have all the answers.
How does that square with doing it yourself so it's done the right way? Like, I'm trying to figure out how those two things reconcile. Because on one hand, you've got a fear of being seen as unprepared. On the other hand, you're the kind of person, self-disclosed, that I go back to home again. You got a little frustrated with your wife for not doing more. But her retort was, well, I used to do more, but you took everything over.
Right.
To which you replied, yeah, because I want it done my way. Do you see the tension there?
Yeah.
The thing I think is so interesting here is this is a Daniel that we have not yet seen, right? This conversation between you and Daniel, this back and forth, this would not have been possible in last week's session. The willingness that he has to ask questions of himself and be willing to examine, even just like, do you see the tension there? Like, you can tell that he's introspecting, and it's very much a different Daniel in relatively short amount of time.
I think what we're seeing here is as we're discussing these things and Daniel is becoming a little bit more comfortable with being vulnerable and a little bit more comfortable with the uncertainty, we're having this organic conversation, and as it's evolving, he's evolving.
Did any of that surprise you?
That's not surprising per se, but it's always exciting and it can be a little bit unexpected given the short amount of time that we've spent together. Like, that's the kind of progress you might expect to see over the course of 6 sessions. Daniel's doing a lot of processing, a lot of thinking. He's trying things on. Most of the work that's being done here, I think, was being done outside of the session itself.
And your goal here is to ask him the type of questions that will invite him to ponder more deeply about the things he's believing about himself and about his relationships with the people he's leading.
I was thinking about how busy you stay around the policies, trying to get those structural stuff in place that wasn't in place, and how much pressure you felt to get that done. And you mentioned how that was taking time away from you, going out and about and being with people. I think the term that was used was in the trenches, again, another battle term. But I wanted to throw this idea out to you. There's a healthy way to stay busy. That's to project myself as a person into my work and those that I'm responsible for and to find meaning in that engagement. But the unhealthy way is just engaging in activity for activity's sake. Mm-hmm. And so what ends up happening is we use busyness as a device, if you will, for warding off the reality of the situation. It just deadens us to our responsibilities as leaders. I can stay busy as a way of avoiding the things that I feel at some level I should do, but I don't feel equipped to do them, or it makes me feel vulnerable to contemplate actually doing them. What are your thoughts on that idea?
Me and a colleague, we were talking about something similar a few weeks ago, because part of the fear is also that if I continue to spend all this time doing some of the policy stuff, I lose the people, then what did I really gain? That would be a hard pill to swallow. Structures, systems are in place, but when you look behind, you got nobody following you. What was it all for?
I feel like this is a major aha for Daniel. Like, I think I actually verbally responded at one point, like, whoa. Because you figure he just spent 4 years putting people on the back burner for the sake of focusing on getting all of these policies and systems in place that he had been left without from his predecessor. And now he's questioning whether or not it was worth it, or if it is worth it, right? He's been entrenched in this way of thinking for at least 4 years, right? The 4 years that he's been in this role, in this school, with these coworkers. And to try to deconstruct that way of thinking, I think only speaks to a courage that I don't even know that Daniel knew that he had.
Yeah, I like your use of the word courage there. Daniel can know the right things to do, but it takes courage to face down your justifications for going against your sense of what is right. You know, the ability to discern what is right is half the battle. We get so caught up in the behaviors of leadership, and we think that busyness and activity constitute effectiveness. And this might have been, this is my theory, might have been what's happened with Daniel. He was using that busyness and the fact that there's always something to do as a way of distancing himself from his deepest responsibilities, which is to develop and grow people. He thinks he's making a choice between standing up these policies and making sure that they're perfected, or engaging with other people and building relationships within the team. And I think that's a false choice. And I think this is something Daniel is figuring out, is that because of his self-image, because of his desire to seek approval from other people, hiding away from people, shutting your door and going head down in something as important as policy development is a great way to insulate yourself from judgment. It's a great way to ensure you never risk anything with anyone. And what I'm trying to help him here consider is the possibility that he may have been at some level of consciousness doing just that.
I'm so excited to see where he goes. Like, if he was able to make this amount of progress in a, you know, week and a half's time, what?
Hey, everyone. McKinley here. You're currently listening to one of our coaching episodes. We also release narrative episodes that explore a single leadership challenge. And we've created these two formats so that you're getting both ideas and a chance to see what incorporating those ideas looks like in practice. We're so glad you're here. And if someone's come to mind while you've been listening, it's probably because what you're hearing could help them solve points of friction in their life. Invite them to learn alongside us by sharing this episode with them.
Daniel, we were talking about the tendency you've noticed in yourself to always feel the need to be prepared. As I'm listening to you talk about that, I can't help but be curious as to what degree your self-image plays into that tendency. I can tell you my hang-up was always I wanted to be seen as the one who had everything locked down. So it much similar to yours, right? I want to always be seen as being prepared. Nothing surprises me. I'm ready for anything. And so what ended up happening was whenever something didn't go according to plan, I found myself getting angry. And then I find myself blaming other people. I wanted to be responsible as long as things were going right, according to plan, then I could take the credit. But when things started going off track, my self-concern around being seen as someone who could manage anything kicked in, and I simply just would point the finger.
That's how I've been. Because for a while, you know, I'm like, nah, whatever wasn't going right, like it wasn't my fault per se. But then again, if I'm ultimately the one responsible for it, it is, you know, and so the word that keeps coming to mind is you got to slow down. Think before I react and just understanding in those different moments, like, what am I actually trying to accomplish? It's still something I'm working on. That's how I say to myself, I'm working on it.
There is no finish line to the work you're doing, Daniel, right? That's just not the way that it works with people. And people are your medium as a leader.
Yeah.
And you're a person. You're not an automaton. You are going to be struggling. If I've got this unrealistic standard, I need to be seen as this person who always has the answers, then it's going to invite defensiveness. But I'm wondering if that's not what your wife is seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that standard that you have set there. If that's happened in the most important relationship in your life, what are the odds it's happened in these other relationships?
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, you're right. It's not, people don't work that way. I wish they did sometimes, but.
You know, and I think that's the key right there. Our job as leaders is to bring them together around shared values, regardless of our individual perspectives. And that's challenging. And we're certainly not being indulgent or letting people skirt around their responsibilities. Seeing people as people means actually helping them be accountable and experience the consequences of their decisions, whether those are negative or positive. To the extent I'm worried about how I look, I'm going to be preoccupied with that. And I'm going to start doing things to buttress my self-image rather than doing things to be helpful to other people. When I see myself as being that person who has all the answers, then I'm all of a sudden, I feel like I've got to have all the answers, meaning I can't let people run experiments, engage in free thinking, try to meet my intent without giving them an exact program. It's that scary too, because they're going to mess it up. So then right. I got to take it over. And it all is flowing from how I'm seeing myself. What do you think of that?
I tell myself that, okay, I'm just being responsible. And in doing so, I've made that about me and not about the actual people and what do they need from me. But having that script has given me the safety net of just, again, having another answer, which consequently prevents me from being present. The challenge for me is in the moment, am I just looking for the fastest or most efficient way to do what I think needs to be done versus just really being in the moment and allowing other people to the space and opportunity to also just be themselves.
As I'm listening to Daniel and Chip, it's incredible to see the difference between the Daniel we have in this session and the Daniel we saw in last session, but it's still hard. Daniel admits that the challenge is in the moment, honoring the sense that he has to see people as people. He has the willingness, but he's still stuck, which is completely normal, right? Because that's how he's been working for at least the last 4 years. That's a hard pattern to break. So what we'll see here is how Chip helps Daniel take those elements that he's discovered about himself and put it into practice, how he can operationalize that self-awareness into something that he can carry forward into future interactions and relationships to make lasting change.
So going back to this AP that you had the meeting with, you felt like you cut her off after you asked her the question about how she was doing. You recall that?
Yep.
So as you sit here right now, reflecting on that in the context of the conversation we're having, what does it occur to you to do?
Before the day is over, just checking in on without the work, but checking in on her as a person.
Go a little deeper. Checking in with her. What might that conversation look like? What might there be a sense of something you could do in that conversation that might help to kind of reset a bit?
I think even apologizing, you know, just for the fact that, you know, and being totally transparent. I looked at the agenda, I saw you didn't have something done, and so I missed an opportunity to really connect with you because you mentioned that you hadn't been feeling well. I knew that. I can see it in your demeanor. And I just totally disregarded that because I had an agenda that I had to get to. Because even that moment, you know, as I'm coaching her and checking in on one-on-one, I do have an obligation also to just see her as a person. And so although she didn't get something done, I think in that moment I didn't get something done either. Hmm. I'm going to do it, actually. Yeah, I was thinking about it.
I love that you pushed Daniel to go deeper. He said checking in, and I just kind of assumed I knew what that meant. And I think so often when we are making this transformation from self-focused to more self-aware and inclusive of others, it's really easy to kind of slough off the nuts and bolts of how we actually do that.
This is part of that process you have to go through. He's just kind of testing the waters a little bit, like, well, my sense is I need to have a conversation. Well, you already had a conversation. It just didn't go very well because it was one-sided. This AP was a line item to you, not a real person. So when he says, well, I need to have a conversation. Okay. What is going to take place in that conversation? If you are now owning your misstep, you're owning your self-betrayal, what does that dictate that you do differently? Do you just forget about what happened? Or do you actually come out and then own it? That's a big part of it, him taking responsibility, which is exactly what he's avoiding when he's not listening and paying attention and being sincere. But it's not just him taking responsibility. It's helping this other person feel seen and valued. And it's also building relational trust with this other person because they're recognizing you as someone who's willing to own your impact and willing to admit when you're wrong and willing to make adjustments to help things go right. And that is huge when it comes to trust.
There's power in him coming to that realization on his own, because in order to get to that place, he has to think through, what is my impact on that other person? And how can I make it as positive as possible in the context of that conversation? Because I know from personal experience, I would have said check in, and I wouldn't have thought about it again until the meeting was actually happening. I'm walking through the door. And then because I haven't taken the time to break this habit where I am routinely self-focused, my default is going to be to go into that meeting and be self-focused, right? So if we're changing this mindset and this way of seeing others, it takes some time and space to wrestle through what may be a bad habit and then allowing him to come to that. If he had been given a prescription or an order of events to follow, he would have done it and would have been able to do it without it ever considering his impact on this AP, which is why I think it's so important to wrestle with the nuances, the nitty-gritty of what does this actually look like to start seeing people as people.
So the next step for this, Vic, is after he recognizes that, then we need to get real specific about exactly when he's going to do it. Like, I'm going to meet with this person on this date at this time. I'm going to set this up, and I'm going to open the meeting up with this apology. And you calendar it, and you get it locked down. Daniel, how does that sit with you? The thought of sitting down across from your AP and sincerely apologizing.
I think it'll be good because at the end of the day, it goes back to a core value of mine. And if I can't man up to it and do it myself, then how can I expect anybody else to do that? I don't want her to leave here feeling bad about the interaction. And then just, you know, that might even slow down the process for what I need her to do next. Because I don't want her to walk around in fear either.
There's two ways to go apologize. One way, I could be totally self-focused and self-absorbed. I could say the words, I'm sorry, but the reason I'm saying it is to let myself off the hook or to ease my guilt, to mitigate any sense that I'm not worthy or that I'm behaving like a bad leader. That's all about me. That's got nothing to do with the other person. The words are perfect, but it doesn't mean anything because of the way I'm showing up. Or if I'm thinking about this more outwardly, where I'm thinking about not only owning my responsibility sincerely, but also the impact I'm having on this person as I'm apologizing, just simply, hey, you know, it occurred to me in that meeting that I asked you how you were doing, and I didn't really take the time to even listen to your response. I was already on to the next thing, and that's not the kind of person I want to be. I'm here now to apologize for that. And just sincerely ask, how are you doing? Nothing is going to help them feel more seen than the fact that they recognize that I made the time to sit down across from them, own my mistake, apologize, and commit to doing better moving forward. That doesn't mean that she's still not responsible for the work.
Right.
Those two things are unrelated. If I am consistently checking in with people and consistently connected to them, it's just something I do all the time. It's like an operating system running in the background. Mm-hmm. Then when we sit down and have those meetings, we might just be able to get right to business.
Right.
Which would be more efficient and more effective, and it wouldn't be forced. If you don't follow through on this sense to apologize to her, you're missing a great opportunity. Don't script it. Just say it with your heart, with no expectation of anything. And go do that, and I want to hear about that experience, how it feels when you walk away from that conversation and we jump back on the next call. That's the first thing I want to hear about, is how that went. That's taking responsibility, my friend.
Now, I don't know about you, but I am very familiar with the hope and excitement that comes with a game plan. But having a plan and actually following through on that plan are two totally different things. And Daniel has done the hard work of getting to this point of self-awareness and willingness, but that's just step one. Step two is following through on that, actually showing up in different, more productive ways. So how did Daniel do? Let's fast forward a couple weeks and find out how it went.
Right after the meeting, I put her aside and actually went in the office and I just basically confessed that, hey, you know, I know we just talked and, you know, I felt bad about the fact that, you know, as I'm asking you how you're doing, I just kind of got right into business. And then she was like, yeah, I feel like lately you haven't been listening to me. Her college roommate had passed away recently. I was asking, she looked like she was sad, you know, and I was like, you know, you okay? And she's like, she told me that and it didn't register what she had just said. Because I wasn't listening. So we talked and I told her about, you know, the coaching that I was going through and I'm getting some feedback and this is one of the things I just felt compelled to do. And it was a relief, you know, it kind of like broke the ice because she was feeling like I wasn't listening to her anymore. So she was kind of feeling, she was doubting herself, like, you know, is there something going on? Or we had about a good 30-minute conversation. It felt good. You know, I just told her, you know, hey, my goal right now is to just be more present. I know I'm always telling them to do that. But I find that as reflecting lately, I haven't been modeling the same thing I've been asking them to do.
I was borderline emotional listening to you guys. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
The fact that he left the conversation with you, turned right around and went and had that conversation with his assistant principal.
Yeah.
And when he was telling that story, at first I was a little bit like, ooh, is he basically just going to talk at this person again? And saying, hey, here are all the things that went wrong and here's how I've wronged you and I wanted to apologize and here's how it is. Thanks so much. And like, at which point we've missed the mark again. What did you make of the fact of him like immediately doing the thing he had the sense to do?
Well, I think he's a disciplined person. So it really didn't surprise me that once he put that on his to-do list, he was going to do it. My concern was, like yours, that he was going to execute it more just focusing on checking the box. I talked to them, I apologized, I'm moving on, versus approaching it with some type of openness and curiosity as to how it was impacting them. So that was my biggest concern, was he was just going to go in there and kind of, this is another task on my ever-growing task list. I apologize, I've got it, and I'm going to go in there, execute, and then I'm going to move on. And so that was my concern.
But he didn't do that.
No, he didn't do that. Actually, I think he was really moved by the answer.
And then she thanked me and, you know, it sort of lightened up our interaction because it was more transactional lately, you know, like, I need this done, I need that done. How is this going? Give me an update on this, that, or the other. And really boiled it down, like the way I reflected on it, like I stopped seeing her as a person. She was just really an object that was getting stuff done for the vein of work that she was responsible for. And that's how I started to treat her in my interactions. Yeah, I was very candid about the fact that I've recognized that I've been acting that way. And she was open about the fact how it impacted her. So we had a really good conversation.
How did it feel to hear her say, I feel like you haven't been listening to me lately?
It was good. I was actually appreciative that she wasn't afraid to give me that feedback, you know, and let me know that that's how I was impacting her. Because in spite of like sometimes the busyness of how I'm going, I do value feedback when people tell me that stuff. So it'll slow me down to just stop. And I just invited her to continue to do that. Help me to hold myself accountable in a sense. If you ever see me getting like this, just remind me to stop. And do what you know my core values are and that I'm talking to a person right now. So stop and just listen. She's like, all right, no problem. She always calls me boss. She's like, no problem, boss. I got you. And so, yeah, it's been good. And she's done it a couple times even since then in meetings. You know, if I get off and she'll be like, don't forget what we talked about. I'm like, all right, sorry, slow down. All right, what did you just say? You know.
This is where Daniel and Chip end their work together. And it's so encouraging because as slow as meaningful change can sometimes feel, the small adjustments you make really do have huge impacts. Daniel went from thinking that the people around him weren't working in the way that they should be to having one of his direct reports feel comfortable enough to say to him, hey, you're doing the unhelpful thing again. That change is just the beginning of the momentum Daniel has after all the effort he's put into this coaching. And it's what he gets to take with him as he continues his leadership journey. Leading Outward is produced by the Arbinger Institute, the premier provider of leadership development and organizational transformation. And here's our invitation to you. If you have the courage to participate in our podcast and have your coaching session recorded in order to help others on their leadership journey, contact us at leadingoutward@arbinger.com. If you'd like greater help driving results in your teams and organizations, the Arbinger Institute has been helping clients do just that for over 40 years. To talk to a team member about your specific challenges and how we can help, book a meeting at arbinger.com.